Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today on the program, we report on fears among some Indonesians that the rise of the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq could create new extremist movements among the country's large Muslim population.
The Indonesians, for the first time, saw the Islamic State as a challenge to Indonesian sovereignty.
Then, we report on the actions of officials in the American island state of Hawaii to prepare people for the possibility of an extreme tsunami.
If this event took place, we'd have to move 340,000 to 350,000 people to safety, a much more daunting task.
Concerns about the development of Islamic terrorism in Indonesia and worries about the effect of a super tsunami on Hawaii. Those are our stories today. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the voice of America, and this is our daily program, As It Is. The last major terrorist attack in Indonesia happened in 2009. At the time, terrorists bombed two hotels in Jakarta. Since then, the Indonesian government has reduced terrorist threats by capturing, not killing, terrorist leaders, such as clergyman Abu Bakar Bashir. His trial, and others, helped turn public opinion against violent militants. But as Kelly Jean Kelly tells us, the terrorist threat has now returned to the island nation.
Recently, an online video showed an Indonesian man who claimed to be an Islamic State fighter in Syria. He called on Muslims to rise up against the government in Jakarta. The video showed many Indonesians their own war against terrorism is not over. Sydney Jones is with the Institute for Policy Analysis of Conflict in Jakarta. She calls the video a wake-up call.
The Indonesians, for the first time, saw the Islamic State as a challenge to Indonesian sovereignty. That's what triggered the reaction. It wasn't that all of a sudden it became more dangerous.
Indonesian police arrested several local Islamic State supporters after the video was released. Some human rights groups are concerned about how the police have answered the video. They say the measures have been too strong and that citizens have not been able to examine the police action. But the Indonesian government is not changing its counterterrorism policy. The government said it will continue to use police and lawyers to reduce terrorism. Some Islamic leaders also have suggested blocking foreign groups from providing money to religious education in Indonesia. Such a ban would include Muslim and Christian organizations. Sydney Jones of the Institute for Policy Analysis of Conflict says more Indonesian Muslims are using social media to speak against the extreme violence of the Islamic State. She says most Muslims in Indonesia are surprised and concerned about what the Islamic State is doing.
One of the interesting things about the emergence of the Islamic State is how horrified most mainstream Muslims are in Indonesia.
Outside Jakarta, the Indonesian government is paying for programs opposed to extremist Islamic beliefs. At the Al Hikam boarding school, young Indonesian men are learning moderate Muslim teachings. Arif Zamhari is the director of the program.
We spread a virus of peaceful Islam to community here. The problem here, because the loudest voice are from the radical, so our moderate groups never speak out.
Arif Zamhari says the newly trained religious leaders will speak in mosques across the country. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
You are listening to As It Is from The Voice of America. Scientists say rising temperatures on Earth's surface are to blame for rising sea levels. The reality of rising sea levels means many coastal and island communities are at risk when a tsunami strikes. The island state of Hawaii is taking steps to prepare for tsunami waves. Officials there want to be ready if such an event takes place. In 2011, a strong earthquake struck northeastern Japan. The quake caused a tsunami. The huge waves damaged several nuclear reactors in the area. Those events led Hawaiian officials to reconsider their plan of action for dealing with a tsunami. Scientists and emergency officials in the state are now preparing for an extreme tsunami, the kind that comes every 500 to 1,000 years. Almost 19,000 people died when the earthquake and tsunami struck Japan 4 years ago. Scientists say the Hawaiian Islands may be just as helpless if such a disaster were to take place there. Rhett Butler is a researcher at the University of Hawaii. He says a mysterious hole on the island of Kauai has evidence that a huge tsunami hit Hawaii 500 years ago. David Burney discovered the evidence. He found remains of old shells, coral, and other sea creatures in a cave about 100 meters from the ocean. Civil defense agencies keep people prepared by testing their tsunami warning system. Scientists say a major tsunami could happen again. They warn that if a powerful earthquake struck the Aleutian Islands in the northern Pacific, a super tsunami could follow. A researcher at the University of Hawaii created a computer model to show what would happen if an earthquake struck the Aleutians and produced a tsunami. The model showed the waves from a major quake could move further inland across Hawaii than officials thought, deep into areas considered safe. The Hawaii Emergency Management Agency works with local governments to create disaster plans. Kevin Richards is an emergency planner with the agency. He says before the computer model, Hawaiian officials thought they would only have to evacuate 85,000 people from the island of Oahu.
If this event took place, we'd have to move 340,000 to 350,000 people to safety, a much more daunting task. And safety is not in the same place anymore. It's much further away. It's further up the hill. It's further inland.
Some Hawaiians could drive to higher ground. But driving is not possible in some parts of Hawaii, so people would have to walk to safety or go to the fourth floor or higher of a reinforced concrete building. Officials are now developing a new plan of action with an extended evacuation zone for an extreme tsunami. Scientist Rhett Butler says because of what happened in Japan in 2011, people take the threat seriously.
It doesn't mean it's going to happen in our time. It doesn't mean it's going to happen this year, next year. But it's just the nature of the tectonic forces on our planet. They just keep marching along, and once you relieve all these stresses with these truly great earthquakes, the water responds.
That's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you. and has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Cruz at the VOA Learning English Headquarters in Washington. We'll be back tomorrow at this same time with another broadcast, webcast, and podcast edition of As It Is from the Voice of America.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. An old internet scam is getting some new attention lately. It is called ransomware. Ransomware is a term used for a specific type of software that locks up files or access to a computer until money is paid. Earlier this year, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, or FBI, issued a warning about an increase in the spread of ransomware in the U.S. Two of the most widespread ransomware are CryptoLocker and CryptoWall. The two computer bugs are thought to have taken millions of dollars from people. The internet security company WebSense says it has found about 2 million cases of CryptoLocker. More than 60% of the cases were in Australia. Symantec is another internet security company. It says a newer ransomware is quickly spreading around the world. The bug fools people with information on the popular television series Breaking Bad. The bug secretly searches out certain types of files in computers and encrypts them. Computer users will not be able to open those encrypted files without the decryption key. And only the person or persons responsible for the bug have the key. Users then receive messages that their files are now unavailable. They are told their files will remain unavailable unless the user pays a fee in exchange for the decryption key to unlock their documents. John Shire is a security expert at the cybersecurity company Sophos. He says ransomware looks for user-generated content, Word documents, spreadsheets, pictures. These could be pictures of your child's first birthday, videos of your honeymoon, financial spreadsheets of your small business, files that you really care about. The price to have those files returned is usually between $300 and $600. Once the payment is made, the user is given the decryption key. Ransomware bugs have a relatively simple design, but they often have a complex encryption standard. That makes them almost impossible to break without the decryption key. Ransomware targets all types of computer systems, personal, business, and government. But Mr. Shire says the most success the bad guys are seeing is from personal computer systems. Little can be done once a device has been infected. But there are ways to protect against ransomware or limit the damage done once infected. John Shire says the best way is to make many copies of all of your files and save them in different locations. And that's the VOA Learning English Technology Report. Give us a like on the VOA Learning English Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter, at VOA Learn English. You can also watch videos on the VOA Learning English YouTube channel. I'm Jonathan Evans.
This is Rich Kleinfeld.
And this is Stan Busby with The Making of a Nation, a VOA special English program about the history of the United States. Today, we begin the story of America's 37th president, Richard Nixon.
Richard Nixon was sworn in as president in January 1969. It was a difficult time in the United States. American forces, allied with the Army of South Vietnam, were continuing to fight against the communist forces of North Vietnam. Thousands of soldiers and civilians were dying. Yet the Americans and South Vietnamese were making little progress. Critics of the war said they were making no progress at all.
At home, there were demonstrations against the war. There were demonstrations against racial injustice. Friends and families were in dispute as they took opposing positions on these issues. Fighting the war also meant there was less government money to spend on social problems. Former President Lyndon Johnson had proposed new legislation to help poor people and minorities. In some cases, Congress approved less money than he had requested. In other cases, lawmakers did not approve any money at all.
Richard Nixon seemed well prepared to deal with the difficulties of being president. He was known for his ability to fight, to lose, and to keep trying. Nixon was born in California. His family was poor. When he was about 10 years old, he harvested vegetables to help earn money for his family. He earned the money he needed to go to college. Then he decided to study law. He was among the top students in his class. During World War II, he served in the United States Navy in the Pacific Battle Area. When he came home, he campaigned for and won a seat in the Congress.
As a member of the House of Representatives, Nixon became known throughout the nation for his part in the Alger Hiss case. Alger Hiss was a former official in the State Department. He had been accused of helping provide secret information to the Soviet Union. He denied the accusation. Nixon demanded a congressional investigation of the case. Other members of the House thought it should be dropped. Nixon succeeded and led the investigation. Later, Hiss was tried and found guilty of lying to a grand jury. He was sentenced to prison.
Some Americans disliked Richard Nixon for the way he treated people during the investigation. They felt that some of his attacks were unjust. Fear of communism was very strong at that time. They thought he was using the situation to improve his political future. The future did, in fact, bring him success. In 1950, he ran for the Senate. He competed against Helen Gehagen Douglas. He accused her of not recognizing the threat of communism in America. Nixon won the election. In 1952, the Republican Party chose him as its candidate for vice president. Dwight Eisenhower was the candidate for president. Eisenhower and Nixon won a huge victory over the candidates of the Democratic Party. They won again in 1956.
During his 8 years as vice president, Nixon visited 60 countries. He faced violent protesters during a visit to South America in 1958. He was praised for acting bravely under dangerous conditions. A year later, he visited the Soviet Union. He and Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev had a famous debate about world peace. Nixon became very angry. At one point he said to Khrushchev, "You do not know everything."
In 1960, Nixon accepted the Republican Party's nomination for president. He had many years of political experience and had gained recognition as vice president. Many people thought he would win the national election easily, but he lost to the young John Kennedy. It was the closest presidential election in American history since 1884. After losing to Kennedy, Nixon moved back to California. He worked as a lawyer. In 1972, he ran for governor and lost.
It seemed that Nixon's political life was over. He moved again, this time to New York City. He worked as a lawyer, but he made it clear that he would like to return to public life someday. Many Republicans began to see Richard Nixon as the statesman they wanted in the White House. By then, President Johnson had decided not to run for re-election. His Democratic Party was divided. The Republicans believed they had a good chance to win the election of 1968.
Nixon campaigned hard against the Democratic candidate Hubert Humphrey. Humphrey was vice president under President Johnson. Throughout the campaign, he had to defend the policies of the Johnson administration. The policies on Vietnam had become very unpopular. Some Americans felt the war should be expanded. Many others demanded an immediate withdrawal.
Both Humphrey and Nixon promised to work for peace in Vietnam. On Election Day, voters chose Nixon. He won by a small number of popular votes, but he won many more electoral votes than Humphrey. On the day after his victory, he spoke to a gathering of supporters.
I saw many signs in this campaign. Some of them were not friendly. Some were very friendly. But the one that touched me the most was a teenager held up a sign, "Bring us together." And that will be the great objective of this administration at the outset, to bring the American people together.
Once in office, President Nixon proposed legislation to deal with problems at home. He called his proposals the New Federalism. One proposal was for revenue sharing. Under this plan, the federal government would share tax money with state and local governments. For 3 years, Congress blocked its passage. In 1972, the revenue sharing plan was finally approved. Lawmakers also approved legislation for some of President Nixon's other ideas. One changed the way American men were called into military service.
The new law said young men would now be called to serve by chance, with a lottery. This was a big change. Many people had criticized the earlier system. They said it had taken too many poor men and too many men from minority groups. These were the men who were fighting and dying in Vietnam. Congress also approved a change to the Constitution. The amendment would permit younger people to vote. It decreased the voting age from 21 years to 18 years. Supporters of the amendment said that if citizens were old enough to fight and die in the nation's wars, they were old enough to vote in the nation's elections, too. The amendment became law when 3/4 of the states approved it in 1971.
One of President Nixon's most important proposals was to build a system to defend against enemy missiles. He said the system was needed to protect American missile bases. The issue caused much debate. Critics said it would add to the arms race with the Soviet Union. Congress approved the plan in August 1969.
Nixon's first appointments to the nation's highest court also caused much debate. He named two conservative judges from the southern United States to serve on the Supreme Court. Congress rejected the nomination of the first one, Clement Haynsworth. Lawmakers said his court decisions had been unfair to black Americans. Congress also rejected the nomination of the second one, G. Harold Carswell. Lawmakers said he was not prepared for the job.
President Nixon faced these disappointments and others. Yet he still had moments of great celebration during his first term. One came on July 20th, 1969. On that day, he and millions of people around the world watched as two American astronauts became the first humans to land on the moon. We will continue the story of Richard Nixon next week.
This program of The Making of a Nation was written by Jerry Watson and produced by Paul Thompson. This is Stan Busby.
And this is Rich Kleinfeld. Join us again next week for another VOA Special English program about the history of the United States.